too. There we go. Like I said, this will be destroyed after, the blog post goes. It won't be passed around for anybody, but just so I don't have to write down everything word for word, which is great.
No problem.
All right, well, let's ease into this, Elise, and just I'm going to ask you just to introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about the part that health data plays in all the things that you do.
Okay, so my name is Elise Mabee, and I'm a patient partner and have been since 2011. Just things that happen to one in the health system sometimes lead you to want to make a difference and get involved to make changes, positive changes. So that's basically what I do. In 2017, I helped co-found the Patient Advisors Network, which is essentially a community of practice, if you will, for patient and caregiver partners in Canada who do the same kinds of things that I do. And so that's the other piece of this. And for a couple of years, I was on the expert advisory group of the Pan-Canadian Health Data Strategy as a citizen member, looking at the role of health data and how to sort of make it better and so on. So.
Awesome, thank you. Just want to go back to the Patient Advisories Network, and can you just give a little bit more information? Like, what's the shared goal of that group of people?
Perfect. It's the Patient Advisors Network,
Thank you.
and we refer to it as PAN by its acronym. There's two goals. The first was to create a community of of peers, of our fellow patient caregiver partners, so that we could learn from each other, so that we could get to know each other. The goal being there to become more effective at the work that we do to help make positive change in healthcare. So that's the first goal. The second goal was as we got to know each other in the community, we felt that we wanted to share our collective wisdom and our collective insights with the larger healthcare community so that they could benefit from that. And we've had some success now that we're sort of more of a robust community. We've had some success doing that. Most recently, we were commissioned by CIHR to produce a report on patient and caregiver partners in research, which we launched in March of this year, and it's on our website. So.
Incredible. Must be nice to kind of come together with a group of peers too, right? Where a lot of that work might be kind of in isolation. So it's nice to even just have that chance to use that language and the acronyms that the rest of people may not understand.
Well, it's exactly right because mostly we're invited in by our healthcare partners and we're either one or two people on a project of, any number of other people. And we don't get the chance to get to know each other unless we have a community that we can sort of rally around or unless we hornswoggle each other to have coffee together or whatever. So.
So we're going to get into like the role of healthcare data and especially how the individual can use that information to empower themselves. But I'm just in a general sense, and this wasn't on my list of questions, so I apologize. But in general sense, how has health data, the role of it, changed over the past decade?
Well, I think with the advent of technology and the complexity of the offerings in healthcare, there is much more data available and new types of data coming on stream as well, like genomics and so on and so forth. So in the old days, we're thinking back sort of a couple of decades, you went to the doctor, they scribbled notes in their file, and that was that. And they maybe got a report from your specialist, which they also dropped in the file, and everything was paper-based. It was not available to the patient at all. We didn't see anything that was written in these reports. And what's evolved over the last 10, 15 years or so is that certainly hospitals in Canada have more and more reached out and created portals into the information that they held. So that patient partners or patients and caregivers could see the results of their encounters at the hospital and some of their test results and so on and so forth. So all of a sudden, because of the internet and the digital age, we've now got the opportunity to have visibility to the data that we normally would not have. And I know for people, I'm not in this situation, but I have colleagues who have chronic diseases or they're caring for people who do. And the complexity of managing their medical situation meant that they would be going around with arms full of binders of test results and notes from doctors and so on, all paper-based that they had painstakingly had copied so that they could have the full information set as they went to yet another provider, and so that they themselves could acquaint themselves with what they needed to know to manage the health situation. So hopefully all that can now morph into an electronic version so you don't have to lug 12 binders from place to place. And I think that we're not there yet, and a large part of that is because the data that's held about us is held on a provider by provider basis, and that's a stumbling block. I have about four portals to the four different hospitals that I've attended, and there's slices of my information in each one of those, but nothing comprehensive. And I have no visibility to my primary care provider or any of the specialists I've seen. So, my data is fractured, so it's very hard for me to sort of pull things together and to help manage my own health situation if I have to try and stitch together data across multiple platforms and multiple providers. So the ultimate goal really is to see that we have one patient, one record in terms of visibility. So not to get too technical, it doesn't require one physical record. It requires one visibility to the comprehensive data about a patient.
Yeah, absolutely. And I could see how that would be super beneficial in rural populations, or especially like I live in a province with that we just got the lovely distinction of having the worst access to healthcare in the entire country. So we have so many people without a family, like a, general family doctor. And so many people here rely on walk-in clinics or visits to the ER where there's not that continuity of care. And so to have like that kind of one record, I could see absolute advantages to that. So you just named one, that's one challenge for this kind of vision that we have for taking healthcare. And we're going to get to the benefits. I'd like to end on the positive. So we're going to start with the challenges first. What other challenges are there for this? This we have access to data, technology. It almost seems like the technology grew super fast. But people's understanding of it may not have kept up with it, or the systems themselves, the procedures may not have allowed for it. What challenges do you see in addition to that provider by provider, to this way that you see that would be so beneficial?
That's a biggie, and it has sort of subsets like interoperability, which the federal government made a condition of passing the funding to the provinces that they work on interoperability. We do have national standards, but they're I'm my understanding is that they are then voluntary in terms of adoption. So part of the funding arrangement, as I understand it, and again, you probably should look at this because I'm not sure, is that the provinces work on interoperability according to the standards that have been posted. And so once we have that, then we have the sort of mechanical capability of doing of sharing data across different systems and different platforms. That's sort of one of the essential pieces. I think culture and political will are probably the other biggest obstacles, and a large part of that I think is perhaps not understanding the role of health data, because for a provider, and I know this from my provider colleagues, They need everything. They need a comprehensive information about the patient to be able to make the most accurate diagnosis and the most effective treatment. If they can't have that, then they are being hobbled in their work. And I can imagine that leads to moral distress for the providers as well. Just not having all that you need to be able to help the person in front of you must be very, very frustrating.
Absolutely. So you're
So,
at
and I think
Sorry, go
if I
ahead.
can just add to that, I think that people don't understand, there's so much talk about privacy of data, and that is indeed something we need to pay attention to. But the flip side of that is adequate sharing of data and the downsides of not sharing data. And that is rarely, rarely talked about. But I know anecdotally that the lack of sharing of data has harmed and in fact killed people. So it is a big patient safety issue, the sharing of data.
Yeah. And so without breaking any confidence, can you give me kind of a scenario where limiting the data, not sharing, could harm somebody?
Well, I would steer you to the film Greg's Wings, which is all about that. And it's a really good example of it. And I have sort of secondhand anecdotes from people, but I'm not really at liberty to share because I don't have it accurate and I don't have permission. But I think what happens too is a lot of people, they go to the doctor, they're not getting what they need or whatever, and they may just blame the doctor. And it may not actually be the doctor's fault. It may actually be that the doctor doesn't have a full set of information or not timely information. So the lack of data sharing is not something that's obvious to most people.
Yeah, no, for sure. So you're advocating not only for the patient, the general populace, but also the medical healthcare providers as well.
I think it would benefit all of us. I mean, basically, most of the physicians and so on, people who go into healthcare that I know go in because they want to care for people. And if they're hobbled in that effort, it must be very frustrating. And I would definitely think that we're all on the same side as far as that goes. Let's have all the tools we need to do the job that they want to do and that we want them to do.
Absolutely. Right, so let's switch and talk about the average person, whether you are, going and seeking healthcare or, that might be in your future. What is your experience with the general public's knowledge of health data?
I think most people, their eyes glaze over and they don't see it as pertinent to them. That's my guess. A lot of people would not understand its relevance. And I think that's a big problem. In a way, we need to raise the awareness because people don't know what they don't know, and they don't know the impact of it either. So in some senses, there needs to be something of an awareness campaign about the role of health data in terms of their own health and the health of their loved ones. So I think that would be sort of a first step, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then, and a lot of us are unaware of the health system or non-system that we have in each of our provinces. A lot of people are only dimly aware that this is provincial and not federal. I know that sometimes when people move from province to province, they discover to their horror what they had experienced in province A is not the same as what they get in province B. And, I frankly, as a Canadian, I really question why it's like that. I would prefer to see, I don't mind that the provinces deliver healthcare, but why can't we deliver the same healthcare across this country? It just seems ridiculous that that's not the case. I think pharmacare is a little bit of a step in that direction of evening it out across the country. I'm hoping that over time that will mature into something that that we can all be proud of and happy to have.
Yeah. Absolutely. We just got midwifery care here, and I have two children, and my oldest is now 16, and I had her in Ontario when I was under a midwife's care. And just the and you know, I love the OBGYN. I'm not saying anything against them, but just the different levels of care was very obvious for me moving, for sure.
Well, it is a big difference, and my daughters-in-law all gave birth under midwife care, and it was such a different experience than what I had, decades ago when I had my children, because midwives were not a thing at that time.
So yeah, I feel you. Just living in a rural place for sure. We're usually one of the last to get stuff, or we have currently one rheumatologist for the entire province, and I'm trying to get in to see him, and I've been waiting for close to 2 years. And I asked, can I go off island? And they said no, because if you do, then you're funding it yourself, because we have one here technically, right? But it's one for, you know, close to 200,000 people.
Right, right. Yeah. So, we have to, I really believe that as I watch all our healthcare systems crash and burn across this country and actually across the Western world, none of them are doing particularly well. And everybody is struggling to find different ways of doing things. I think in order to do that, we have to think outside the box. We can't be doing the same old, because the old adage, you do the same thing over and over again, hoping for change, and it won't. So we need to
No,
think about it differently.
I
And
love that.
I think the role of the public has a big role to play, but they can't play that role without information. And part of the information is understanding health data and the role of health data. And in order to understand health data, you have to, in my opinion, understand the health system that is the plumbing for that data, and how it moves and how it doesn't. And the health system is structured by its different silos at this time, but those silos are somewhat stitched together with a regulatory system that one needs to understand. So it's not enough to understand each silo. You have to understand how they interact with each other, and that is process, regulation, convention, and a bunch of other things.
So let's talk about this literacy effort that's needed to understand health data. Because if I'm going to, I'm going and getting a bunch of tests, you know, and I can't access, and I have done that, but I don't know how to read the test results. All of these conversations we're having about understanding the healthcare system, your average person might say, well, how is that helping me understand this particular test? So let's just kind of chat through how just understanding can benefit you with that kind of information.
So I think that it depends on the person, how much understanding they are prepared to, or how much work they're prepared to do to understand at what level their tests. For myself, I'll be honest, I see my test results, particularly from one hospital, and they just, they give me all this sort of statistical data, but then they have a little bar that says, this is the range of normal. So all I care about is that my little dot is in that range. And if it's not, then I want to ask the doctor why. That's sufficient for me. But I do have colleagues who, again, are, have much more complex situations, and they have as much knowledge as any physician about what those statistics mean, and they monitor them daily because it's their life. And for them, they want to see the full deal, and they should. For the rest of us, just understanding that our little dot is in the normal range is sufficient. And there are some people who don't want to see it, but they should have it available, and then they can just not look at it. And that would be their choice. And then they would just talk with their doctor as they normally would. But I think the visibility to our data is important. And I think there are ways of presenting that data that we still have a long way to go, where we can, the dot within the normal range is one sort of easy, user-friendly way of doing it. But there are other challenges to that. And I think, those are projects that are being undertaken in some cases together with patient caregiver partners to understand how to present data to the general public so that it's consumable in an easy way.
And to bring it
And
back,
that needs to continue in spades.
yeah, and to bring it back to the challenge that you identified, that it's also uniform from province to province, right? Like how that. So I don't have dots. I would love to see a dot. I've never had data given to me in that way. I get the number, and then I have to go onto the internet if I'm curious and like Google what is normal. And you know, a person, what's normal for me might be very different than what's normal for even a peer of mine for the same age group. And what, you know, we're all different. So just to understand what.
Well, and the other thing too is trending, is my blood pressure over time going, averaging up or averaging down? I mean, those are things that that I think the more information of that sort that we have, the more people will take control over their own health and their own lives and welcome it. I think a good example of people wanting to take some control are all those people who walk and run with Fitbits and watches that tell them, oh, you've walked so many kilometers today. My husband has a watch and we'll go for a walk and he'll say, oh, well, we did 3.7 kilometers today.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it has helped him. I watched that how he looks at that, and it's not that he's a fanatic or anything, but that information guides him. Oh, I only did X much today. Do you want to go for a walk after dinner? And so it helps him maintain a certain healthy lifestyle because he gets this information in a very easily digestible form. And people are used to that now more and more. Certainly those of us with the privilege to buy gadgets. And people who
Absolutely.
can't afford that sort of thing is that's a whole nother story. But there is more of an awareness of the role that data can play in health through the gadgets, in my opinion. And so therefore, I think that people really are starting to have a growing expectation of having more data from their health providers and so on. And
Yeah.
But your point earlier about the fact that the data is not displayed the same way. So I go for blood tests in and I see it on portal A, and I go for blood tests and I see it in portal B. I don't get the same information in the same way necessarily. So there could be standards about how data is presented overall. And if we're going to move to a basic, common patient, it's called a patient summary in some cases, but a patient record for this conversation. Then apples need to be apples. They can't be oranges, And so there is work afoot for that. I know that CIHI is looking at data content standards, and they have opened it up to the public. It's a very technical document, unfortunately. So talking about needing a little sort of context and help, but still, these are important steps to helping provide that. Because as you said, you moved from Ontario to PEI. My sister moved from Ontario to BC. You want your data not only to follow you, but to be comprehensible in the same way across all the provinces in this country. And
Absolutely.
so, yes, we should have national data content standards, which CIHI is working on.
Absolutely.
And so I think all this sort of movement is going to make some of the, they're the underpinnings that will make some of this possible. It's just not moving very fast.
No, it never is it? I always want it to move faster than it can. So I want to kind of just focus in on the individual, and how we can empower ourselves. And so if I read this blog post and I'm inspired to get access to some of my data, or the next time I get a test to actually read it, how can I increase my own literacy? How can I kind of combat, there's all of that misinformation or whatever. If I Google, if I do a simple Google, what is a normal blood pressure for a person in my age, I might get all kinds of different answers. So where, what are good sources? What are some good guidelines for that? And how can we safely, I guess, and knowledgeably, if that's a word, increase our own literacies, that we're doing it in an informed manner.
So I think that patients and caregivers can request their records or aspects of their records or their test results from their providers. That would be a start. I mean, it may be paper-based to start off with, but if there's any possibility for a portal, they can request it. I think putting some, I hate to use the word demand, but some pressure to provide this information electronically to patients is, just that alone will start to move things along on an individual basis. If you have your information in front of you, you could ask your provider to take the time to walk you through it and explain it. They usually don't have a lot of time, so that's maybe difficult. I don't know, like Google can give you a lot of information, but as you say, you have to parse through the disinformation and the misinformation to get to the gold. And finding sites that are credible is difficult. I think that it would be something I would like to see in Canada is Health Canada would list credible sites. So that would be just, that would be a bonus. So you could just go to Health Canada and says, if you want health information, here are sites that we feel are have credible and valid information. Beware of any information you get that is not coming from these sites. I mean, personally, I will look at things like the Mayo Clinic. I sort of figure they're probably good or, stuff like that. I do know that the provinces or many of the provinces are starting to move to what they call 811 service, which is sort of a health information service. And those 811 services should be housing valid information, particularly the more local information. So that would be something I would suggest people look at. The 811 service in Ontario is coming on stream. It's not mature yet to the point where we want it, but it's still got some very valid things. It has a symptom checker. It has some resources and so on. And, every month there's something more and it's more robust. And I know there are other provinces that do that as well.
Do you see more of a positive reaction from healthcare providers? Because it used to be like, especially when the internet first came out, right? Doctors didn't necessarily want your average person Googling because we would all come and be scared we were going to die within 5 minutes. We would come with the worst case scenario. And I can understand that, right? You have a level of knowledge, and somebody without that level of knowledge is claiming to have kind of an equal level of knowledge. So do you see any like more movement toward, okay, let's work together as a team and how we can still elevate healthcare professionals as, having more knowledge, but working together?
Yeah, it definitely depends on the professional, and I think some of it's a bit generational because some of the younger doctors have grown up with technology and Google, and they use Google as much as anybody else for various things. So they would assume that. In some cases, I've heard some doctors say, "I'm really grateful when they come with questions because they're now really asking, penetrating questions because they've been on Google." And and then there are other doctors who are still old school. I'm the fund of knowledge and you're not. So don't bring some stuff to me because I know. And I've had heard from colleagues who've gone to the doctor with questions based on their Google searches, and the doctors have said to them, "Wow, I did not know that. Let me look into it and get back to you." So the doctors themselves were grateful. There is so much knowledge out there, and especially the challenge I think for family doctors is, my gosh, they can't be deeply knowledgeable about every ailment and possibility that would occur. So, I think if you're a knowledgeable patient and you have, a particular condition, you say, "Well, I've done a whole bunch of research." Yeah, why wouldn't the family doctor embrace that? Because it helps them do their job well.
Yeah, I guess you have research and then you have research, so I can understand the different reactions to it, which is why we need that national kind of standard, right?
Yeah, I think so. Or certainly,
Guidelines,
you
yeah.
know, some way of knowing which sites have the good housekeeping skill of approval, if you will.
Absolutely.
You know, and which sites are to avoid and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just scrolling through quick because again I went totally off script, which I knew would probably happen. Given the state of healthcare, and I'm not going to get too political here, but the average person and just this kind of level of distrust that a lot of people have in any kind of system, how do we build that trust back? How do we empower people at the individual level without them making it feel like they're doing somebody else's job now, right? So how do we kind of positively get that message out there?
Well, I think it's not so much getting a message out, but acting in trustworthy ways, right? So it's you can't demand trust of people, but you can engender trust by acting in a trustworthy way. For me, I would say I would trust my physicians more if I could see what was in my record. What are they writing about me? You know, are they writing that I'm, you know, a hysterical woman and should be ignored, or are they taking my symptoms seriously and, you know, positing ideas about what they might pretend? So access to our records is a very big element in building an element of transparency, which leads to trust. So I think that's the first piece of it. I would say the second piece, which I feel is equally important, is that if when we're looking at our records, we see that there are mistakes or things that we feel are not correct or things that we feel are missing, what can we as patients do about it? Because the decisions that are being made for our health are being made then on faulty data. And that does not serve us well, and it means that our physicians can't do their best job for us. So there needs to be a mechanism by which patients, after they have looked at their records, can say, you know, excuse me, you removed my left kidney, not my right kidney. Could we please get that correct? And that actually is an anecdotal story I heard from someone who had it wrong in her record. So, you know, these things are really important. And doctors are in a rush. They may have dashed something off and, you know.
And that's a big obvious thing. So just thinking again of the literacy component of that, me as like just a lay person, I could catch that. I could be like, no, that was the wrong kidney. But what about like a test where the results is a number and I don't know what that number means?
So it depends if what we're looking at are test results, and you're right, we need to find a way to make test results consumable by the general public. But if we're looking at doctor's notes, they're usually a digest of what they've seen. And so in the notes might be something like, oh, it looks like, you know, from the test results, I see that her blood pressure is, you know, increasing and has done over time. So we need to look at X because that's, you know, because that's the case. So any patient, I think could read that and understand it. I think one of the difficulties is going to be a lot of doctors write in some, their own personal kind of shorthand notes. And so they would have to get accustomed to actually writing in real language as opposed to shorthand notes. What will help that, ironically, is technology, because there's some new technology coming on stream, which is called AI Scribe. And that has enormous benefits, not only for relieving the administrative burden of doctors updating their notes, but it also means that when a doctor is with a patient, they are really with a patient. They're not sitting there typing into their computer. And so there's two benefits to that, that I think will start to even out some of the issues with lack of readability, if you will, of the doctor's notes once we finally get a chance to see what's in our records.
Yeah, absolutely. This is incredible. There's like so much here. I could still write like multiple blog posts on all of these things that you're giving me. So thank you. Is there anything that I didn't ask that you feel would be important to include under the umbrella of health data?
No, it's, I think it's really just how do we rally people
Yeah.
to be aware of the need to understand it more and to partner not only on a personal level, but also at the ballot box for changes that will support a more robust health system going forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they say democracy thrives when you have these various pillars, one of them is a well-educated public. And how are we going to help our decision makers at the political level make good decisions if we are not understanding and informed, at least at a sort of general level? And with the changes coming so swiftly, particularly with the advent of AI, we're going to need to make some legislative changes very rapidly in order to protect public health data or our personal health data, rather. But what changes are they? And how are we as the public going to help guide the decision makers to make those if we don't understand what's going on?
Yeah. Do you find
Yeah.
that in the work that you do that the public is receptive, or are we just too tired these days and we don't want any?
I think there's information overload right now. So I don't I think they're sort of neutral about it. It's not like they're hostile to understanding more about it, but there's no obvious need. I think it starts with an awareness campaign to get back to that, where we need to be aware of these things. These changes are coming. They're going to impact us deeply on a personal level. So we need to understand enough about them so that they don't become totally terrifying and so that we can guide the decision makers around us.
Yeah. Do you think it's fair to say that most of us, and by us, I am talking about like the general public, only kind of care when there's a reason to care? And so we're not really in that preventative mind space. It's like if I have something really wrong with me, then it becomes an area of concern. But until then, I might not.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's true for all of us. I look at my 40-something sons and their wives and their families. They drop into bed at 9:30 and they're exhausted, putting kids to bed, having very demanding jobs, and to layer something like this on top is more than they can really consume.
Yeah.
And yet, it's going to impact them. I think of my two grandsons, one with a badly burned leg and one with a broken arm. You know, they're already in the health system there and it impacts them and so on. I mean, we're very fortunate we in Toronto have sick kids because they've been very well treated. And I know both my son and daughter-in-law have done everything they can to research those things so that they care for their children the best they can.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
they don't have a lot of bandwidth, and absent those experiences, people aren't going to be doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and a positive health awareness campaign that shows how this can benefit people can take some of the strain off of the overworked medical system, but obviously still respect and elevate that medical professional's knowledge can benefit the person on the individual level. Is that a good summary?
Yeah, I think, you know, we really need to think about how we would structure an awareness campaign. I think about, for instance, the smoking cessation campaign took 20 years, but look where we are now compared to when I first entered the workforce, where in a room of 20 people, I was the only non-smoker, you know, and it was just like this fog everywhere and it was acceptable. And if I complained at all, I would have been, you know, shown the door, frankly. So the societal attitudes, the societal understanding about, you know, smoking and the harm from cigarettes and so on, That took a while, but that campaign was brilliant. What can we learn from that to bring the whole concept of the need to understand health data and the harms of not sharing health data? You
Absolutely.
know?
Absolutely. I think we need to, there's within the system a focus on taking some work off of certain people's plate, or at least more of a team approach or something. And at the individual level, it can improve your health, it can save your life, right?
Yeah, exactly. And certainly if we want to move to team-based care, then health data plays a huge role because everybody will have aspects of things and it will need to be in one place, visible in one place for the whole team, and I would include patients and caregivers on that team.
Yeah, absolutely. Well,
Yeah.
Lisa, it was delightful chatting with you this morning. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, a pleasure, Christine. And if you want to go another round, I'm sure we can dive into more aspects.
I could chat about this stuff all the time. I don't, like I said, I'm not a healthcare professional. I don't work with data, but I certainly have people in my life where this stuff has mattered and has caught my attention, and I've had various reactions to bringing that knowledge to different medical professionals. So some of them
Yeah.
are open, others are like, "You're doing my job. What are you doing? You don't know what you're talking about." Like that kind of an attitude. So,
Yeah. Well, lots of change needs to happen and is happening and in a positive way.
yeah, absolutely. Final
Yeah.
question, and then I'll let you get on with your day. How just a piece of advice. There's no like research based on this, but just from your experience, how can a person kind of gently approach maybe a reluctant medical professional, or just any medical professional, I'm not going to term it in reluctant, with the data that they have in the best possible way? Like tips for kind of bringing what you know to your medical professional.
I think in my personal experience, the most effective way of bringing potential new knowledge to somebody who thinks they have all the knowledge is to ask questions. And so you've done some research. I think you can go to your doctor and say, you're the professional. I have done some reading and here's what I found and I'd love to know what you think about it.
I love that. I think that's respectful on both sides, so that's it.
There has to be respect. I mean, these people have gone to school for a zillion years and they do a lot of reading on their own time to keep up with things. So one can't dismiss that. Plus, they have years of experience. On the flip side, particularly people with long-term chronic conditions, they have years of experience with that condition that they bring to the table. So between what their experience in a lived experience manner and the doctor's professional or the professional caregivers, sorry, providers, experience coupled together should be sort of like having a richness of two.
Yeah, which two heads are better than one, right? They say.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's hope this can happen and we get some national guidelines and standards out there for at least the record keeping part of it. We're still trying to, here in PEI, we're still trying to move toward the electronic record system. So most things are still by hand and very isolated from one another.
Well, Alberta did a really good job. They went with one system. I think Quebec's not doing too bad a job from what I can tell. It's a little bit hard. But Ontario, because it's so large, they decided to allow for a lot of competition, which is all very good if you're thinking in a business mind. But what that's meant is that we have something like 14 different approved record-keeping systems for doctors. And, so now we have to talk to all of these vendors and get them on board with, interoperability and building interoperability into their systems and blah, 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 blah. So it's made it more of an uphill battle. I
Yeah.
think some of the smaller provinces are actually getting the jump on us as a result.
Well, let's hope we can all get there, and we have like more of a universal healthcare system that we're supposed to have. So.
Exactly. Well, here's hoping that's what we're all working for.
Okay. All right,
Okay.
Lisa, lovely. And like I said, there should be the opportunity for you to review this this blog post before it gets. I'm just speaking on behalf of CHIMA, but I'm pretty sure that that will happen.
Yeah.
And we will be in touch when it is drafted. So thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Take care.
Meet you
Bye
in touch.
now.
Bye bye.